This is Wilson Paul talking. We're now in Winter Rock, July 9, 1971. We are here for the Navajo Code Talkers First Convention and our recording material for the book, The Navajo Code Talkers.
Das ist Edensia. Wer hat die Dick an die Sicht? Das ist Ben. because there's nago the kid at say not del last it at that to the dino at asha ye khagi ol kishige asha asla sai nazpas nat onse ish khagi Roin de tai han ne gi de si. Et od ana ana on gi de ska. Na on se pe la sana sa se pe tra. A wo. Si ze pe tra. Na be ho ke le chogi tra sa a na sa pe ni si se gi. Pe tra. And in spa, a chi de la sana, shin bentio, nishi benti, shinigi, okrobeta, dinain spa, ze, a chi, be, no die, a loss, ze, betra. Belasana, zeh ich dort, ich auch. Betra, awo, kin, na tunse, zeh, de peh. Betchen, trazi betra dort, trazi behat, ige, betchen. Betra, hakko, masse behat, ige, zeh ben, jo. Betra. Be ye an IQ or Kessel. Kendo chi a hatted or bit hot. Be yin. Kizabe hat it a tie or Kessel. Kizilla or chin. Do se chai. Do in the da. Snap. Ze bit hot. Kanji abalati yichi go a lost be hat yi kanji ben yo a kon so ga shi be de chi batis Zaid up it is, ide tanosh ego, shat in shot abahat ade eya, nsake siki abahozanugo, at ishin to the dice, behozanugo eba kase. A could unlead it, ide at Saint Gonagre, or kisigi, hajibe hat e adit at Saint John, Hanedeska, Ado in the Hajo, and his edeska. What kiss? They had ege not on se will at she sas ze petra kaji she ze petra nabe ho nest ebe had ege kelichoge tasa anasha ben idi shaki aro in detta nest e petra do nest e pelasana shin ben o nest e ben petra anna atchi techa nota allos ze petra at e belasana behat ige aro indeta olke lago de pebentu kodo indeta petra tech Haji Nasjat Anaki was on the Ado Hakko Masabe Hat Ige Anapen to D. Kesanel Betra Bigi Anaki Kesanel Kendo Achi Anaki was on the Ado and Detta Betra Digin Paul Ne Hat Nisha Evic Ever Nasjat Chai Petra Sena Pans Ze Petra Tranje Allos Notai Kish Tranje Akut Oben Arekane to the cheat Batches Kosyoste. Hotte. Then the Jonot, what a Tosaho attenda. The third Jinigin, the third art, what our in Lala, I say, but kiss. Hakoshin, a chink where. Then I just get all this, or did not admit in a street all this. Oh, big as all this. Put it all this, and I see it and I can't be bigger. So, here, a corner.
We have just heard Jimmy King sending a message. From a hill behind the museum, over across about a mile, where another team was accepting the message. They send it back. May the Navajo Nation endure all times to come. In God we trust. Sent July 10th, 1971. 1810, Mountain Standard Time.
We went up to... I've forgotten the town. It's this side of Nakasaki.
Sasebo, Kagoshima.
Sasebo, I think. Well, Naga. It's beyond Sasebo.
Huh?
Anyway, it Sasebo. Was this big train depot. This is where all the
Anura.
Anura, yeah.
The naval barracks of Anura.
And all the service, Japanese service people were getting discharged. So the captain said, Corporal, he says, I want you to take these men, take this company, and you take it over there and be in charge. And don't let these fellas fool around there. You just keep them on, push them on. So we went over there, took them, and I set them all up where they got to be stationed.
Over and out.
And finally, one of the fellas came over and said, hey, Chief, why don't you find out where the head is? Because we need to go to the head. And I said, okay. And I started thinking, I forgot all about it. It's a simple name, but then, yeah, and I couldn't think of it.
So,
So then, finally, I thought I'd wait till the next train comes. And the first one that talks English to me, I'll ask. So I waited, and here comes one, and this fellow came up to me, and he said, "Good morning." So I said, "Good morning." I said, "Say, where is the head?" He looked at me, and he said, "Oh, you sick in the head?" And I said, "Marine Corps, we say head. I mean toilet. Where is the toilet?" "Huh?" I said, "Toilet." I couldn't think of it, and then he was the last guy, and he was coming, and he didn't say anything to me. Finally, I just said, "Hello." Then it just hit my mind that then it was banjo.
Banjo.
Yeah, then I
banjo
said, yeah.
Banjo, yeah, look at this.
Yeah, then I said to him, and then he said, "Come on." So we went over there. Was a training on Hawaiian Island, and this was the fifth. On a 2-day maneuver, and so this. Lieutenant, first lieutenant, his name was Stormy. I don't forget his real name was. And he says, "Now we're going to see how tough you guys are. We're going to cross this Hawaiian desert in 2 days, and you're going to use only one canteen of water for the 2 days. And we're going to see how you preserve your water. And at the end of 2 days, we hope to get across that desert." So he said, "Be very careful." So we did. We started off. It was just hot, like it's real hot across that desert. And I imagine we walked about 20 miles that first day. And then we bivouacked there. And we were saving our water. We saved it. He gave the orders that we shouldn't eat those cactus prickly pears. I don't know if that's safe to eat or not, he says. But anyway, he says, "I don't want any of you to eat that. We don't want nobody to get sick." Well, the Indians knew about it, how to eat that. So when we were going along, you know, when it gets 3 o'clock, while we went over there, while he wasn't watching, we cut the tops off, and then we cut it down and get the middle, and then we sucked it, and we saved our water. Next day, we started off, and we were walking about 10 miles, and everybody had drank theirs all out that night, so we pull out, and we shake ours like that. Yeah. "Oh, how do you Indians do that?" You know, all these white boys. "How in the world did you keep all the, how much water you got?" "Oh boy, we got lots, you know, we just shake it to, you know, those guys just dying, you know." Around 2 o'clock, right, then they start keeling over. They couldn't go any further. And finally, Ambrose is here. Ambrose and this other guy that was dead, Malone, Rex Malone. He said, "Let's go over there. Let's go over there to Stormy. See how tough he is now. Let's go up to him." So we went out. He was sitting on the hill, you know, just sitting there. "Come on, let's go. Let's don't wait. Come on, let's go," we told him. And he says, "You fellas still have plenty of water?" "Oh, yeah." And he just look at us, and we just shake it in front of him. And then he just starts perspiring worse, you know. "Come on, let's go now, because we got 10 more miles to go to get out of this desert." "Oh," he says, I don't think I can make it." He says, "I'm out of water." And he says, "I don't want to ask you guys for your water, because that's, you know, that's yours. You're supposed to preserve it." So Well, and so then we just sat down. Well, we'll sit down till all of you wants to get up and go. So we sat there, you know. Yeah. But he didn't know we were doing this. And so then, finally got up. He says, "Now, everybody, now let's go. Now, if you think you just can't make it, just go ahead and stay right there. And when we get back to camp, we'll bring some water out." Well, we only went about 100 yards, and he fell down. And he says, "Boy, I don't think I can go any further." Everybody laid down. Everybody, they couldn't. Except us three, we still could. We were still standing up. And then finally he said, "Hey, chiefs," he says, "you think you can go all the way in and go back to camp? And then I'm going to write you a letter to Colonel Woods and have him tell him that we want those 5-gallon cans filled with water, and tell him to fly it off and drop it." We said, "Okay." And then then also get a water truck and tell him to come in tonight and bring it in. So we went ahead and we got in just about 5 o'clock into camp. And then
still with water in your tank.
Yeah. And we went over there and I gave the note to Colonel Woods, and then he read it and then he laughed, you know. And he says, "How come you guys don't have water out there? You should always carry water." And I said, "Well, this is what he told us." And he says, "Oh, that's not right. Oh, he's supposed to know that only one canteen is supposed to last one day. He should have given you two for the 2 days." "Ah," he said, "that's stupid. Okay, we'll do it." And he says, I'll get the airplanes right away and drop some water over there." So that's what they did. And I guess what happened was when they dropped those cans, just split open, those boys run over there. They just had to look at it. They said, "Oh, boy," they said they almost died. And then the funniest part, see, this lieutenant said for the truck to come at night, and that was about 8 o'clock. So here they were. They were still dying of thirst, and the truck never came till 8 o'clock. And they said, "Boy, they almost drank all that water in that tank." I don't know how many gallons, 1,000 gallons, I guess. They almost.
And you never told the lieutenant.
We never told him.
You.
But after that, they thought, gee, those Indians there.
Might have. Wow.
No wonder they live on the reservation. They can live without water.
Blatchford is your name, isn't it? This was Mr. Blatchford telling us one of the best stories of the war. Thank you a lot.
I've been wondering about the use of the sacred corn pollen, and I finally found somebody who knows. What is your name?
Peter Dessie, Jr.
Peter, tell me about the use of the corn pollen, particularly in battle.
It doesn't go along with battle because...
Well, just any place where there's danger, or is that it? Well,
you just described it. Okay. Yeah. Okay. To begin with, corn is actually a sacred plant. And the way it's planted is sacred. It has a certain procedures. When it's planted, it grows. The tassel comes out. The corn comes out. The ear corn comes out. The time you shake the pollen off the tassels, it is sacred at that particular time.
Yes.
You know, all during the growth, it is sacred. Any plant is sacred in its growth. So when it comes out, you know, all you have to do is you have your pollen pouch, and you just replace the pollen that is, you know, in your pouch. It's almost gone. So all you need to do, you don't have to have perform a ceremony to make it sacred. It's already sacred.
Yes. How large a pouch do you usually have?
Mostly
a couple inches. Oh, bigger than that.
About 1.5 inches to about 3 inches.
Yes, very good. What is the pouch made out of?
Pouch is made out of unwounded deer skin.
I see. Very good.
And this pouch is carried along with the person. I don't know about how they do it now and nowadays, because I have a pollen pouch and it's in my car.
Yeah.
And you keep it along. It's yours, you know. When you have a certain ceremony done for you, you make these pouches for the family or for yourself also.
Mm-hmm.
And there you have a pouch when during a ceremony. Other than that, you can't make a pouch without a ceremony being done, you know.
I see.
And it's blessed and fun. It's given to you.
I see.
And it's yours from there on. If you lose, you have to have a ceremony done to
make another one.
To make another one, or else to reestablish the you're losing. You know, if you lose a corn pollen pouch, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's something sacred, and you see you kind of lose your rapport with nature or whatever.
Mother Earth.
Yeah. So. To reestablish that, you have to have a ceremony done to in order to reclaim your pouch or to make another one.
Yes, yeah. If you found it, then you'd have to have a ceremony.
Yes, since you've lost it for a number over a long
period of time,
within that time there might be some disorganization within yourself or within your family, such that you know it affected them psychologically. So you could reestablish that psychological balance again when you have the ceremony done.
Now, and when they carry it, you said that when the other men in battle were frightened, the Navajos felt a certain security because they had the sacred pouch. Would that be true?
Oh, well, actually, the Navajo pollen pouch is within every prayer. In any ceremony, there's a pollen pouch in it, and that when you pray, you actually pray along with the certain movements, gestures that you go through with the pollen. You pray alongside it, such that it's within every prayer you say, and you have.
You never open the pouch.
You open the pouch because you use the pollen.
Well, you do use
yes.
the pouch. And you put it then you put it on.
You
on
put
your
it in on your tongue.
On your tongue.
Representing your speech.
Yes.
And your whole communication
yes.
aspects of it. Then you put them on the top of your soft spot here on top of your head. That signifies the soul. The thought process. Anything you think, and then you kind of like take some and kind of spill it towards the east, which signifies all along that you're praying, such that you know, you're presenting it to the gods, to the deities.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of toward the sun, really, isn't it? From the east.
Yes, yeah, towards the sun mostly.
And now, I talked to one man who said that every day that he was gone in service in the South Pacific. His mother took her sacred corn pollen pouch, went to a hill that she considered sacred at dawn, and prayed for him every day he was gone. And so this, see, what he has to tell me ties right up with what
mm-hmm.
Mr. Brown said last night.
Actually, there was probably a ceremony done during the time that she took the pouch.
Undoubtedly, yes.
And that ceremony was a prayer and sort of like a gate closing toward any evil forces or any detrimental forces that would come upon you. So she took the pouch and used it on the sacred mountain and used it and prayed, such that she actually, in a sense, put an invisible force around him by praying, yes, to protect him all the way around, which gave him such.
Thank you very much. Will you spell your name so I'll be sure to have
your last name?
My last name is Deswood, Deswood.
Deswood.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And your first name is Peter.
Peter.
Junior. Thank you very much. I'm glad you listened in and you got this information.
Japanese. They picked me up twice.
Thinking you were a Jap?
Yeah, the Army, United States Army picked me up. Took me for a Jap. They was going to shoot me. Army kept and picked me up.
Aren't you the one who said that the way your beard grew?
My beard grew straight. That's Japanese. What's that Japanese?
Is that the Anglo?
Anglo is different. They go smooth down this. So they almost that mean?
And your language is very much the same, I find.
Yeah, it is.
Well, anyway, you're here.
Yeah, I am. Glad I got home, though.
Now, one big reason that I came out this time was to get some more. The book is done, but I wanted to expand the section that had to do with instances, and I think I probably wrote to you and asked you for some particular instances like this business of your having been captured. And I'm looking now particularly for humorous things. Some of these men have some very funny things. He's a card anyway, you know.
I
wonder if there's anything that you'd like to add to what and it doesn't need to be actually connected with your work as a talker. Just something that happened in
I was with the Anglo boy. We spend the nights in the foxhole. Same time I'm working the radio. And I'm working with this other unit down there with Australia. Australia troops. We have Navajo boys down in there. In fact, I worked with them too. Australian troops.